Hey, I'm Daniel Colburn.
I'm Caleb Porzio.
Welcome to 20% Time, where two coworkers discuss one programming topic per week for an average of 40.9 minutes.
It's been a while, bud.
It has been quite some time. What have you been up to?
Oh, I've been up to things. Project I'm working on, you know, like we talked about, it was a green field. It's less of a green field. It's still kind of green. I mean, it's still a green field, but The field is less green. The grass is dying. You know, I'm in the zone right now where the problems are hard. I've already written code. I'm already changing features, and it's just hard, you know?
You're dealing with, like, decisions that past you made.
Yeah, I'm definitely dealing with decisions that past I made, yeah. I'm dealing with things that are hard enough that it's annoying and tiring, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm in that zone where sometimes I feel really good about it, and other times I'm just very much tired from having to, like, deal with so many things that can't be perfect, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah. But it's good, you know, challenging and good. And I've been really, really exercising so my Laracon talks called Embrace the Backend, and it's going to be on some of the stuff we've been talking about not like Ajaxing stuff and not handling a ton of state in the front end and passing stuff through to props, you know, that little conversation, that ongoing.
Yeah, no, conversation. I heard about that on a podcast one time.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
On a podcast, on the internet?
It was two guys talking about it. One guy was very smart and sounded attractive, and he definitely won.
Huh. That's not the one that I heard.
Anyway, carry on.
And now there's like ongoing jokes within Titan Slack about like what's the bold statement you made? Like, people pay us to write JavaScript.
I still buy that. No one has yet shown me more than one project we have signed in the last 18 months that didn't involve us writing component-based JavaScript.
Right, but people didn't pay us just to write the JavaScript. We chose to write component-based JavaScript.
But people didn't pay us to do stuff that didn't include JavaScript.
Well, yeah, right. Yeah, okay. I mean, that's... I won't dismantle your stance. It's a fun stance, so
anyway,
I like
anyway.
It. It's become an inside thing, and...
If you wanted to call in on the episode about podcasting, you should have called in on the episode about JavaScript.
Yep. So yeah, JavaScript. And so I've been really like pushing it to the extreme in preparation for the talk and just to test the idea, like how far can you go without Ajaxing? How far can you go without managing state? How much can you do on the back end? But still do a lot on the front end. Like my front end still has lots of behavior, but I'm trying to, I don't know, I'm doing crazy things. So there's tons of stuff there, but that's what's up with me. What's up with
you? How far have you been able to go?
Pretty far, super far.
Have you found limitations?
Have I found what?
Limitations?
Yeah, I've gotten over most of them. There's one thing that, I don't even feel like it counts, but there's one thing that I'm going to have to do that's kind of like debouncing, like saving state as the user manipulates stuff so that if they refresh, it like kind of leaves off where they left off.
Mm-hmm.
So I could...
You could do that with local storage.
So it's not like that kind of the thing. It's like if they like leave off, and we need to know like how, you know, how far they've gotten in a process.
Gotcha.
So I could break the process down into more things that hit the server, but... Mm-hmm.
Are you sticking a cookie?
The cookie thing wouldn't go because I need it on the back end. I need that info on the back end.
Gotcha.
But I may have to write my first Ajax request in the whole app.
I'm sorry.
But it's the kind of like, it's a harmless Ajax request. You know, it's the kind where you just send stuff out and you're not like receiving stuff and manipulating state based on the response or anything. It's just kind of sending it off into the oblivion. So it's good. It's actually been really good. I think you probably saw... Did you see my hidden input view component thing?
Yes, that was very cool.
Isn't that cool?
You did a cool job.
I was pumped about that.
It was a cool job.
Yeah.
You did.
Yep. So that was fun.
I've been writing a lot of view.
Oh, yeah, right. You're all of you.
All of you.
All of you. All of you loves all of me.
All of you.
All your curves and all of your edges.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
I tell you what about Vue. It's very curvy. They have rounded off all of the edges of a good programming language like JavaScript.
Wow.
And they've made it very, very plastic there. And Fisher-Pricey.
If front-end frameworks were shapes, Vue would be round. React would be full of hard edges.
If front-end frameworks were shapes, Vue would be a Fisher-Price toy that where you have like pegs of different shapes that you have to put in holes of different shapes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like Baby Einstein.
Mm-hmm.
Like Baby Einstein. That's just how it feels. It feels completely on rails. It feels like I have no freedom and I have no power.
Wow. Well, you can do anything with anything React can do, Vue can do better.
Worse.
No, but anything yes. React can do, Vue can do, right? Like what can
right,
you not
yeah.
do?
Well, sort of, right? That's the thing. It's like you can do anything.
Right, but you got to kind of stray from the path of the Fisher-Price path of documented stuff.
Yeah, and like you have to unnecessarily like inject it into random places, you know? Like I don't want to have like a methods object that contains methods. I just want a class that has methods. It's a class. Why can't it just have methods? All classes have, you know? Or like I don't want like this sort of indiscriminate object called data, you know? And then like but then there's computed properties, which are basically data, but they're not in the data object. They're in a separate thing,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's just like the whole thing. It's like, why did you structure this data? Like the data would have been fine if you hadn't structured it. It would have just been data because JavaScript already has a concept of data.
Yeah, I mean, I'm totally comfortable with it just because that's what I know and I like it. And I like the way that I like the compartments. They fit my mental compartments. Like, oh, well, this is computed and it's... I don't know. Yeah.
It just annoys me being in that framework when I just feel I don't know. And it's just the fact that everything's a script tag that bothers me. There's a lot of little things about it that bother me.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
Where I'm just like
David Hemphill, I haven't listened to the new Dads and Dev, but he's leading the charge on the JSX in Vue experiment. He's like full JSX in Vue. Maybe not full, but he's doing it.
I'll listen.
He's doing it. Yep.
I
so that's
listen.
Cool. Yep. Yeah. So.
Cool. Yeah. And also, in addition to that, I've been doing DevOps, which is not my normal bag of tricks.
Oh, yeah.
I have a good amount of experience with like DevOps for small stuff, you know? Like
yeah, yeah.
Spinning up little servers and installing Varnish and Nginx and configuring Nginx, you know, doing all of that like little basic stuff.
Yep.
I do not have experience with DevOps inside of a large organization where there's like load balancers and, you know,
yep.
Docker containers and stuff.
Yep.
So anyway, I've been doing a lot of load balanced Docker container stuff. Docker composing up the Postgres database to, you know, blah, 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 and sharing the environment between here and CI and CI and master
mm-hmm.
and you know, all of the...
And your dear friend and servant, Jenkins.
Jenkins, my butler, yeah. Jenkins is... Okay, ooh, hot tip. I and one of my colleagues at the client company... we modified and adapted the Jenkins style sheet to make it a dark mode because
ooh.
If you're going to stare at it for 8 hours, you don't want it to be bright white.
There you go. Nice.
So that is a major quality of life difference because 2 days back to back, we stared at Jenkins for 8 hours. And the first day, both of us had headaches and the second day we didn't.
Wow.
It was a significant difference.
Awesome.
Yeah.
You know what's really nice? When you get to use that Jenkins nice interface. What's that called?
Uh-huh. Blue Ocean.
Yeah, Blue Ocean.
It's very nice.
It's weird that how like they're the same thing and Jenkins is kind of both.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of one. And it's fun. It's always nice when you get to look at that.
So we had to run, we had to get dusk tests running in CI.
Mm-hmm.
They're very slow. You might have heard.
I've heard.
And so what we did is
I left a PR in my wake. Mm-hmm. Of
you and another guy. There were two open PRs to get dusk into Jenkins. And then I came in and created two more branches.
Nice.
Yeah. So at one point I think there were like four or five open PRs about this. Anyway, we eventually got it going, and then because it was so slow, we broke all the dust tests out into groups, and then we parallelized the groups in Jenkins. And so there's these little Docker containers. So basically you spin up this Docker container that like runs your tests, and then you can scale Docker containers, which basically mm-hmm. means like just duplicate this container.
Mm-hmm.
And so we just like set up the container we want, then we scale it, and then in each of those containers we run a separate group.
Mm-hmm.
And they all run in parallel. It's great.
Yeah, it's crazy. I saw your little, just like the graphical output in Blue Ocean, mm-hmm. that's just shows this branching happening when it gets to the dust test, and it's just magnificent.
It's like a weird flowchart. It's cool.
It's awesome. Sweet.
So I hear you have a list of 26 to 31 mini topics.
Yeah. So, well, as I'm doing this project, there's all these little things, pretty much anything blog post worthy. Some of them are small blog posts, but anything blog post worthy, anything that I sort of do that I think is interesting or other people would think is interesting, I write down in this little list, and I'm up to 31. And yeah, so they're not all like full on topics, but here's one, like self :: versus static :. This is one I've had lingering for a long time. Mm-hmm. I kind of know the difference and have looked it up a couple times, mm-hmm. and I kind of get it, but then I forget. And then I have to put, go ahead.
One is the instance and one is the parent.
Right. Or one is specific. Like, yeah, one is specific to the class it's physically written in. And then the other one acts how you'd think it would act.
Yep.
Right. Like if self is called, if, right. So self is the one that's explicit. Self is the one that says myself, like this mm-hmm. class that I'm written in. And if a child object that's instantiated with a parent class that has a self, the self will reference that parent class, where static will reference whatever the object class is, you know. Does that explains it, right? And that matches what your conception of it or whatever?
Okay, so self refers to the class in which the new keyword is actually written. Static refers to whatever class in the hierarchy you called the method on.
Right, yep.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so static's like flexible, static's what you think it is. It's like a lexical
this type of a thing.
Yeah, yep. So, right. And so I've seen both.
I see. Here's an example. Mm-hmm. Here's an example.
Uh-huh.
So I could create a class that just has a bunch of static methods, right?
Yeah.
So say I have a class that is called instance generator, right?
Yep.
And it has a method called like make a new one of me, right? Or duplicate me.
Yep. Uh-huh.
We'll call it duplicate me.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Uh-huh.
So say that I am in my user controller.php.
Uh-huh.
Right? And I want to make a new user controller.php.
Mm-hmm.
I could call whatever class generator or instance generator :: duplicate me.
Okay. Yeah.
And if I used static, I would get a new user controller. Okay. And if I used self, I would get a new instance generator.
Yeah, right. Like if user controller extended
the
instance generator?
No.
Then you'll have to explain again.
Because I think this is how this works. Because I've run into this problem before. Oh, here's an example.
Who's doing the newing? You have a class. You have a class called mm-hmm. instance generator, right?
Mm-hmm.
That class has a static method, right? Mm-hmm. called Duplicate Me, right?
Duplicate Me.
With it, describe to me exactly what's in the Duplicate Me method.
Return new self. New static.
Or new static, right. And then from your user controller, like your...
From my user controller, I say instance generator :: duplicate me.
Right, okay.
So do I get a new...
Right, you... No,
user
no, no.
Controller
I'm
or a
almost
new
positive
creator.
That that's a wrong... That's wrong. So here's how it would work. Here's how it would work. If you... Either way, whether you have static or self, it's going to give you a new instance generator. Right? Like static or self.
Oh, but if new instance generator extended something.
Yeah. Yep.
Gotcha.
If it was extended by something, if it had a child, you know, self would give you the new instance generator. Static would give you the new of whatever you're calling it from, whatever you're calling it on, you know. Yeah, I mean, I could even miss some of that. Like, there's...
I went down, like, a lexical this direction, but it's not actually that.
No, right. No, it's... It's just... I mean, it's the late static binding stuff that I... It's just kind of one of those words that I hear and kind of get and whatever. I know it enough to be useful, I suppose. So static versus self, that's one of those ones, like I go to a boot method in a model, I go to write a boot method and a static boot method, and then I like do some static :: deleting or creating or something to write like an event hook in the model. And I always write self, and then sometimes I go, wait, should I write static? But just visually, self looks so much better to me than static. Mm-hmm. It just feels better for some reason.
Yeah, and well, it also works more like that in JavaScript, self.
Okay.
No, that's not JavaScript. That's just some libraries. Okay. Never mind.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Okay.
Continue.
Yeah. So anyway, so I was writing self, and I got in the habit of writing self, and I always don't know. And then I always write it down like, hey, at some point I should look into this so I know when to use which. Like I kind of know, but like what are the implications? So basically here's the answer. The answer is use static all the time unless you deliberately need this specific functionality of calling the specific class. In that case, you'd use self. So anyway, whatever. It's just little stuff like that that you kind of see both and you don't really think too deep about it and you use one. And so, I don't know, whatever.
Yep.
But there's tons of other like bigger stuff. Get alias for pruning remote tracking branches, recursive blade /view components. I don't know. Tons of...
What's remote tracking branches?
So you know how like your local, your Git, your local like whatever, your local Git,
your local branch tracks
thing.
To a remote branch.
Yeah, right. You're tracking a remote branch, and when you delete the branch in GitHub, your tracking branch isn't deleted, and so they just sit out there and they're stale. And there's just like a Git command that you run, Git prune origin remote or something like that. I don't know. And then it gives you like a dry run, and then it tells you, and then you can just prune them, and it deletes all the ones that... I don't know. It's just kind of an up, like that's one of those things that I sort of lazy about, like cleaning up my local branches and cleaning up my remote branches. It's one of those things that there's tracking branches that are sort of littered and buried in the background. And then there's also a bunch of normal branches that are kind of all over the place. And I never take the time. I still want to get a better workflow for getting rid of local branches.
Why do you want to get rid of local branches?
When they're done and merged and they're over with. I just want a clean setup, you know?
Gotcha.
You know, when you type git branch tab and then it's like, do you want to show 500 lines?
Is there a way to make fetch delete branches that don't exist on the remote?
Is there a way to make fetch delete branches? Say it one more time. Say it again.
So if I have branches on my remote that I don't have locally,
right?
I get them by using git fetch.
Yeah, uh-huh.
So what I would like is a git fetch that, right, in addition to pulling down missing branches, deletes unnecessary branches.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think I actually looked into this, and I believe it's a lot of hackiness. Like, you have to write your own little script that does this. Like, people have written bash functions that do this. And it's kind of involved, and it just like diffs some things and greps some things and pipes some things, and then it's done. But that's essentially what I wanted. I want like a sync, like a git sync that's like removes things from other things and adds things to other things, you know.
Here we go. Git fetch --prune. Before fetching, remove any remote tracking references that no longer exist on the remote.
Right. Those are remote tracking branches, which are not like first class normal branches in your local.
Gotcha.
They're like this hidden under beast layer of branches because they're tracking branches. Yeah. 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 There's no quick answer. I went down the hole for a little bit.
Dang.
I know. Yep.
Cool.
So
that was a fun mini topic.
Yeah. And there's about a zillion of them. Oh, here's one. Here's a fun one. This is one that I did, and I think you'll like if I haven't told you about it. So whoops messages. And this is like, you're familiar with this. We may have already talked about this, but this is something that like the app you're working in does this thing that I've, you know, it's been done. I've done it a bunch where you swall. So you have like a try catch or no, you have an Axios and a then catch. And then in the then catch, it's kind of an edge case for you just want to catch a 500. Like you deal with all the normal cases well, like your 422s and all that. But you don't want it to just read 500 silently somewhere. So by, for whatever reason, you want to add a swall that says, whoops, something went wrong. Please contact customer support with an email link. Right?
Right.
Like that's one of those things. So I came across this. I'm writing an AJAX request in this app that I'm working on. I won't go into detail because earlier I said I don't have any AJAX requests and I actually do. But that's that remote thing we haven't talked about where I'm like fetching HTML remotely. So it's an AJAX request for HTML, which we should talk about too. But anyway, I have an AJAX request and I'm like, I do not want to put a swall in this catch, but I don't want to leave it. I actually published this and somebody on Twitter was like, yeah, but what are you doing if it 500s? Where's the catch? And I'm like, oh, I really don't want to add this catch, but it's kind of responsible. So,
right.
So here's what I did.
And also you're going to get like the, all that uncaught promises nonsense.
Yeah. Yep. So basically, yeah, what I ended up doing was setting a state, like an error state in the catch, and then a piece of DOM that toggles a component that's VIFed with that error state. So let's say in the catch of an Axios call, let's say a 500 hits, it hits the catch, then there's a this.show whoops message or something equals true, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then in the template, you have a component called whoops message that you VIF.
I've thought about this already. I've like literally gone down this road in my head.
Sweet.
I'm with it. I want to do this.
Yeah.
But my approach was mixins.
Wait, let me finish my thing.
Okay.
And then I want you to tell me your approach.
Okay.
So this isn't a swall message standard. I was like, you know what? While I'm at it, I'm going to put in the extra time and I'm going to make it an inline message, you know, that's like right in the DOM. It replaces what would have been shown, the loading wheel, instead of just sitting there loading while a swall has popped up and looks garbage. Bootstrappy nastiness. It's like inline. It's nice. There's a SVG little icon that's some exclamation point or something funny and friendly. A sad face, I think. And then a nice whoop, something went wrong. And it's in like gray muted text. It's not in your face. It doesn't jar the user. It's kind of subtle, but it's like something did go wrong. So it replaces right in the DOM. And in the mounted hook of that component, I hook into Bugsnag and I fire off of a specific Bugsnag error that says the swall message was seen by a user. So instead of just like nebulous errors that just hit and you just ignore them because they're Bugsnag JavaScript errors and they're super hard to debug, it's like, oh, wait a minute. Like sound off. Like a user saw this. A user saw me. Someone saw me. And I want to tell you specifically.
Been seen.
Yeah. Like you could do a Slack message that says, hey, a user just saw a whoops message. Like,
yeah.
You know? So anyway, I was really pumped about that. What do you think?
I think it's cool. My thing was not actually your thing.
Okay.
But I really don't like swall. I think it's real bad.
Yeah, I agree. I can hear someone stopping me from saying it's bad or saying that you don't believe that. I don't believe it's bad, but I know why you're saying it's bad and I agree.
Well, the main reason I think there's several reasons I think it's bad.
Okay.
One of the primary reasons I think it's bad is because it writes directly to the DOM from inside of a view component. And like view components already have a way to write to the DOM and it doesn't use it.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're just going to do that, then you basically give up on the ability to ever test that.
Right. Yeah. I was like pairing with you on testing Swall, and that is no fun at all.
If Swall is at all part of your workflow, that view component will never be tested. is
right. Cause it acts. So when you're in Jest or something, that's, you know, you're not loading up a whole window, like browser
right.
thing.
You're just like diving through a view component. Right.
Right. And it has its own way to render, like shallowly stuff. Render a view component. Swall uh-huh. tries to write to something that doesn't exist. And then you're
right.
screwed.
And then you get all these errors like document doesn't exist
right.
and
yeah.
all kinds of
yeah.
other stuff.
It's,
right.
Right. It bleeds out this outside the scope of the component in a big way.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's bad.
Yeah.
So, but what I want basically is something Swall like, right?
Uh-huh.
Something that can, let me merge a couple of my desires into one and then tell you the solution.
Okay.
So what I want is something Swall like, something that I can trigger from a failed promise or something and then just pop up an error, you mm-hmm. know, and it's mm-hmm. a pretty universal like container that can have like a dismiss button or an yes or no buttons, you know,
mm-hmm.
or whatever. And can, you know, show you a message and like maybe an icon, you know? So you could build that component pretty easily,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And just like with some state and, you know,
yep.
just build yourself a nice little view component, right?
Yep.
And then I have this other desire, which is like, if I get an error in the actual loading of the page,
mm-hmm.
so say for example, I was like, was redirected here after submitting a form to PayPal,
mm-hmm.
right? Like I submit a form to PayPal, PayPal redirects me back to this page.
Mm-hmm.
And along with that, I'm getting some errors,
okay.
you know, that my controller, passed along
okay.
from PayPal. Right.
Okay. Yeah.
I want to display those errors, but I want to display them in the same way. Right.
Uh-huh.
So how do I do that?
Uh-huh.
Here's what we do.
Okay.
Mixins, right? So you make, a view component mixin that's basically like page, right?
Okay.
And then all of your page level, top level
yeah.
view components use that.
Okay.
Right? And that should, like there should be a way to basically have some state and an event listener, right? So there's like an event listener that listens for, you know, whatever error event getting fired,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And then there's also like a little piece of state, you know, that gets updated that has the, or not state, it would be a prop, right? A prop, or you know, some computer property, I guess, is how you would do this in Vue, right? But there's a piece of data that, like, if it has an error in it,
mm-hmm.
we're going to display this box, you
okay.
know, and
yeah,
then
yeah.
like whatever other stuff is in there,
hmm.
and so that way you could pass a prop into the page component that was an error. And because that was there, it would cause the box to render.
Nice.
Or you could fire an error event somewhere.
Yeah, and how would it listen? Like, you like view errors don't propagate unless you use like some sort of
yeah. So event I haven't totally figured that out yet. But this is my idea, right? Like
uh-huh.
this is my general idea is like if I can just like listen for those events like at the top level and catch them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how yet. Because I don't want to like just pass everything all the way up.
Right.
So like the easy way to do it would be with Vuex, right?
Uh-huh.
Would be like, oh, just like update the error message in Vuex and then you're good.
Yep.
But that I don't think that's ideal because then you have to pull Vuex in on everything.
Right.
Although on Adam's recent podcast, they were basically like, Vuex is fine. Always pull it in. which that's not what they, I don't want to misrepresent them. But basically the guy was like, people don't pull in Vuex enough. And I don't know. I tend to disagree.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like ideally, I think that's what I ideally want to do, right? Is like,
yeah, that's cool.
And like, you can just fire plain JavaScript.
Right.
Events.
Like, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know?
Right. Yeah. I like the concept of the mixin for the root level page component that handles the error stuff.
Yeah.
And it knowing how to, you know, deal with that as a root component, a root page component. And we talked about that before. Like, I really dig the concept of treating that root page component in a special way.
Mm-hmm.
As far as the other stuff, like passing around, I can't immediately envision how you do that. Like I said, like the emitting events like only happens one component deep.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd either have to propagate that, like keep passing them off to the next component, which is obviously no good, or do have some sort of event bus that you could put together probably really easily. But then
you could fire a plain JavaScript event.
You could fire a plain JavaScript event for sure. But then you, then your other components, I don't know, then it's, you're sort of firing a plain JavaScript event. It would be nice if like Axios, if you somehow hooked in, so you abstract Axios behind this dot money HTTP or something, and then you somehow hook into the catch. I don't know. I guess this is a bigger question. Do you believe in globally handling Axios errors or handling them on like a per component basis? I guess it's kind of ridiculous to do it on a per component basis.
Well, no, it's not, right? Because if you are in the situation you were just talking about where like the Axios error is for a specific input, you know, or for a specific form, right? Say there's multiple forms on a page, right? Then you want to handle those on a per component basis.
Right.
You know?
Yep, because you need to handle those specifically, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, then maybe just catch the 500s. Maybe just like offload that piece of work, catch the 500s and in your Axios abstraction and somehow communicate to your page mixin to show some nice, you know, modal that says, hey, something's effed up.
Okay, so this brings me to something.
Okay.
So I've been working, you recall, you've heard this podcast, right?
I've heard.
So I talk a lot about this resource client.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Been talking about it for years.
Yep. This is your unified field theory.
This is my unified field theory of code. So it's getting there.
This is Alexa. This is bespoking entire applications.
Everyone always tries to conflate the resource client with the Alexa build me an app. Those are two completely different things. But the resource client, no, what the resource client is like, I don't like making Axios calls.
Oh, okay. My gosh. Right, right.
The Echo is talking in the other room.
What? Oh, that's hilarious. Yes. Oh, I love it.
I have to go make it. Oh, it stopped. All right, cool. That's hilarious.
Nice.
I was yelling. But okay, yeah. No. So the resource client, all it really does is you have resources, let's say, in Laravel, right? And Laravel has some helpers for resources. So it has the resource route helper that just generates all of the routes and binds them to controller methods, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And gives them names and all of this stuff, right?
Yep.
All the stuff you would need for an API. Or even if you wanted to have some front end with it. What it doesn't do is let you publish them. You know, there's no way that I can say, dear app, give me all the resources. Even if I've declared them all using this route resource thing, those don't get stored on any sort of a stack anywhere.
Right.
But what I want to do is from the front end, have not. So Ziggy is my routes, front end, back end, marrier. So basically what Ziggy does is it has knowledge of all of the named routes in your application from Laravel on the front end. What I wanted is something very similar to that, but I wanted knowledge of all of the declared resources in your app on the front end so that I could do things and what routes were available on those resources so that I could do things like providing you a client, which could get, which could do all of those resourceful verbs on any of those given resources. And I could basically cover over Axios, never see Axios again, and do things like post.index, and then that would return a promise, you know, with all of the stuff in it, or like post.update and pass it an object, and it would like figure out what object this was and what the ID was and pass it all up, etc.
Right.
So this has been the dream forever, is just like no more Axios requests, no more clients, no more client.js, you know, no more like client.js with a get method and a post method, each of which wrap an Axios client, you know. None of that. I don't want any of that ever. No more. What I want to do is in my post.js, I want to say post.index or post.create or post.update, you know?
Yeah, it's cool.
And so that's been the goal forever, right? And it's like, and to me, this is all about like the bigger thing of like, there's this friction between your front end and your back end, right? Mm-hmm, and the friction is that like you have to do this dance, you have to do HTTP to get content from the front end to the back end, right? And that's what GraphQL tries to solve, and that's, you know, lots of people are trying to solve this lots of different ways. But for me, I'm not going to use GraphQL in Laravel apps. And I'm not like, there's just not a good way to go.
Mm-hmm,
right.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I want to do is remove that friction, knock down the wall, and basically extend my API from Laravel that I love into the front end and just access that API. Right.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so this is a step towards that. So what I've been thinking, and this is the reason this is the thing I'm really into right now. And this is what I kind of want your take on. Higher order components. Imagine a world where you are making a list of posts, right? Yeah. And you could, and I'm not exactly sure how this works in Vue, but I could tell you how it works in React, right? You could basically say post. So you drop a JSX tag into your React and say post, you know, and then you say like index, right? Post index.
Okay.
And then inside of that, you would put your single post component.
Oh, and it would automatically have access to all the... So all the requests are happening from the higher order component.
From the higher order component, right.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
And it's passing all of the props down into the child components using a spread operator.
Whoa.
Right?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
You see what I'm saying? And then if any of those child components had an update method...
Yeah.
The higher order component would be listening for like an on update call,
right,
and an on create call,
yeah,
and an on whatever. So any of those child components could use the methods of the parent to update themselves or delete themselves or whatever. And then the parent would be managing the document, which was like the state of all posts.
Right, right.
So all of the state management, all of the HTTP requests, what happens when I delete something, what happens when I add something, all of that nasty stuff that you hate about JavaScript,
right?
You can just abstract into this one place.
That's pretty cool.
Right?
I like it. I do.
Right?
Yeah, that's cool. Okay. You could do like, there could be some Hadias stuff in the background where like when you index, Laravel gives you back like the URL to update, like each record has its own URLs for updating and deleting and stuff, you know, like it could be easier than doing some computed or pattern thing to like generate update or delete URLs. Cause you need the IDs in the update and delete URLs,
right?
Oh, I
already
have Ziggy. Just to pull the ID out of it?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm pulling Ziggy in as a dependency. So Ziggy is like the engine behind
I imagine there's some... do you ever, well, I guess because right on the back end, you would be using some packaged up thing that you know, puts it out in a unified way where you wouldn't get a bunch of weird like route, like URLs with different URL parameters and stuff. But anyway,
what do you mean URL parameters?
Yeah. Like in the thing you're describing in the front end, if you have an update request, that's more than just a resource /ID. You know, there's something more complex about it. But if you're using...
Yeah, I guess you would have to pass those in as props to the post object.
Right. Yep.
Or to the post component, like higher order.
Right.
I think is fine.
That's pretty cool. I wonder how many... I'm trying to think, like, how many instances is it just as simple as getting them all and then doing stuff with them? What about...
But it wouldn't even have to be getting them all, right? Because you're specifying index. So index means loop through these and display the whatever children are in here, display them and give them the props, right?
Yeah, right.
So index means like get them all, then loop through them and manage them in this way.
Yeah, yeah.
But you could also do show.
Right, and then pass
it
an ID.
It could still have all of the methods to update itself and blah, 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 blah.
That's pretty sweet. Yeah, right? I dig that. And I dig it, and I can see it. I can see it.
And you could also do, here's the real thing. Here's a real crazy thing, right? You could also do create.
Okay.
Right? And you just generate it if your component was just a form, right?
Uh-huh.
So you can just do post create, wrap that around any form that you drop.
Okay, right, you know? Right.
And then it just
and the submit button just the, like gets caught or something. And
well, no, I mean, you have to have an on submit anyway, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It, like in React, you have to do something with the submit button, uh-huh. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
So you just make the thing that you do with the submit button call that parent method that hits the create endpoint.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so you have your component, your post.create component or whatever, your post-create component.
It would just be a post component, right? And then you would specify the method.
Okay, post.
And I don't. I'm trying to get to a point where you don't even need to specify the method, and I can just intuit it based on what you're doing.
Okay.
But we'll see.
We'll stick with this. So method equals create. Mm-hmm. That's your component, and then you have a big slot, scoped slot, and inside of that. Are we shaking? We're shaking. Shaking water. So inside of that, so you got post, method create, and inside of that you have form DOM that's just input items and stuff. And let's say that their V models are two attributes that the parent component gives you. So post method create has a scoped slot and it provides you with like let's say title and description attributes mm-hmm. that you vmodel that input to. That
yeah, I don't care where you store that data. You can store it in your own state or whatever.
Okay. How does post.create, when you actually hit the button, how does post.create get the data it needs to post to the server?
So you say on submit,
uh-huh.
Right?
Right.
So I don't know exactly how you do it in Vue, but I guess the big way in Vue would be to fire an event with data, right?
Okay.
But in React, I would just say on submit.
You can do on submit. We have that.
Okay. No. I'm not saying on submit. Everyone has on submit. What I'm saying is like in React, what I would do is say on submit this dot props dot create and pass in the data.
I don't get it. Can you help me?
Yeah. Okay. So you have your form, right?
Yeah.
That form is in a component.
Yep.
Right? It's called the post create form.
Yep.
Component, right?
Yeah.
So I drop post.
Yep.
And inside of that, I drop my form component.
Okay, yep.
Okay, so then my form component, yep. When it's all filled out and I press the submit button.
Yep.
The create method was passed into it as a prop.
Gotcha. Okay.
By its parent.
Right, right.
Which is the higher yep. order sort of like post component.
Tracking.
So on submit,
yep.
I just call that method.
Right.
And I pass it all of the data.
Okay. Gotcha.
Wherever I stored it. I could have stored it in an array or I could right, have stored right, it in a right, state right. or I could have like written it into a JPEG image and then decompressed it, you know?
Yep, yep.
Like whatever. It doesn't matter where it was stored, but I just pass it into that create method.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. That makes sense. And that's probably the simplest way. What I was thinking, which I think could be cool too, you know, like scoped slots in Vue, which is whatever in React. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a scoped slot and the post thing itself gives you like array destructure-y gives you all the attributes of a post as like data points that you can then use in V models of the inputs in the form. So that when you're like typing into the HTML, the input element is vmodeled to, let's say, title. So when you're typing the title in, that data is actually being changed on the root higher order post component level. So then on the submit button, you just have at submit or something or create or whatever. You just fire off the create method that the post component gives you, and then it knows how to package up the data and send it, and you can have, I don't know, validation in there for sure. There's like so many cool things you could do. That's
cool. So the thing that requires, which I have thought about doing but haven't even come close to tackling yet,
uh-huh.
is so currently like there's like fillable and stuff in Laravel yeah. models,
yep.
right?
Yep.
So right now my resources. Oh, I didn't even talk about this, but I have like a PHP class called. Well, okay, I guess I can talk about the name of the package. The package is called Natural,
mm-hmm.
right? And it's natural resources and blah, blah, blah. And there's a bunch of cool little API design things. Like you can like to store a natural resource to the state is natural resource conserve.
Mm-hmm.
And you can natural resource destroy, and then to export them all to the JSON that I pass into the front end is natural resource exploit.
Nice.
Anyway, it's all very cute. But anyway, so natural resources are currently only aware of their routes and controllers.
Right. Not
they're not currently aware of what model they're bound to.
Gotcha. Okay.
So what would have to happen for what you're suggesting is something that I think is cool, which would be to make them aware of what model they were bound to,
mm-hmm.
and which you can intuit from the name pretty easily.
Mm-hmm.
And then go look at the fillable on those and then figure out what types those are, you know, and do
right.
all of that.
Yeah, that's cool.
And then pass that down with the resource, which I think is totally doable and very cool.
Uh-huh.
But like, because there's so many weird things about like what people could be doing in like, it requires,
yeah, right. That
it requires that's when... people to be sane, you know, because as soon as people start doing crazy stuff in their controller methods where they're like, you know, like they're storing something as a string, but they want it to be an, in, or I don't know, you know,
uh-huh.
like
yeah,
as
yeah.
soon as they start doing weird or like they change the name of a property when it's in the controller versus when it's in the database, you know?
Oh yeah. Right. That's that funny. I know what code you saw that made you say that.
Whenever people start doing crazy stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is all going to break down.
Right. Yep.
Right.
Right. So I think the, what you're proposing strikes the perfect balance of unified field theory, but not so much so that you have to change the way you do everything and make sure you adhere to like to all the things you're describing. That would be nice and would give you all these cool tools, like knowing,
which I think are still like, that's something I would love to grow towards.
Yeah, yeah.
But
just
like,
as a simple,
I
like,
I want to nail the like JavaScript, like JavaScript through controller.
Yeah.
Let me nail that first, and yeah. then we'll go look at models.
Right.
You know?
Yep. Yeah, long down the road when Laravel does the Rails style validation in the model and everything, that's your unified field. You got all the validation in the
uh-huh.
front end too,
uh-huh.
and you know how to like read and interpret it, and you
yeah.
get front end validation and back end validation and only defined ones.
Well, that's true. Oh, I didn't even think about using validators for this.
No,
right?
Totally.
Could,
even just in the thing, you could
resource,
just catch 422s.
No, if you just passed a validator into a resource, right? Or if the resource checked to see if there was a validator named what we think it should be named in this place.
Mm-hmm.
And if there was, then we know the form layout of this resource.
Hmm.
So say there's like a validator,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Called like post validator.
Okay.
And it's
yep.
in this random directory.
Yep.
You know, and this directory is the directory that we're watching for validators.
Okay, yep.
You know?
Yep.
So say I natural resource post and I
yep.
create a post resource. It's going to go say, okay, is there a post validator in
right.
the validators directory?
Yep.
And if there is, it's going to look at that validator and it's going to know a lot about the layout of, you know,
of the data.
Things that of the data
yeah,
that
yeah.
it's expecting from
right.
to come into the API.
Yeah.
So it can pass that down and it could, you know, then we can do all kinds of things on the front end, like generating a form and, you know, doing all the front end validation, you know, all
yeah,
of that
yeah.
craziness.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting.
So that's a whole crazy world that I'm not going to like
yep.
go into right now. But like, anyway, there's a lot there.
Yep. Totally. I dig. Very nice, D-Cole. I dig.
Yeah.
I see it now. I can see it.
You see it?
I can see it. Yep.
Cool.
Sweet. Oh, cool beans. So, I mean, there's more stuff in the list. We could talk, I mean, there's a bunch of stuff here, but we could talk startup stuff. We could talk, like, business
sure.
ideas.
Oh, my gosh.
We're getting the howl.
So, okay, I started mowing my lawn and my dog started simultaneously freaking out about it at the same time. So maybe we should just wrap it for today.
Okay, that sounds good. Let's do one more. Let's do one more code one.
Can you hear the lawnmower?
No. Not at all.
Okay, it's so loud.
Is it? I can't even hear it.
It's
even
like
the tiniest bit.
My whole life is this lawnmower right now.
Can you focus?
I think so.
All right, if you can't, we'll cut it.
Go for it. No, we're good. We're good. This is going to be such a terrible edit.
Let's see. There's so many little good ones. I'll just start naming a bunch of things. If anybody, I might just drop like a bunch of things and people just don't scoop me. I think I want to make like a video series or something, like building an app and implementing all these things. But I'll just name a bunch, and when you're interested, tell me to stop when you talk about it. Warming caches with a cron, using spies with real-time facades and the make partial method, using snapshots for internal fixtures and JSON tests.
Using snapshots for internal fixtures and JSON tests.
Okay, right. Yeah, right. I didn't even process what I was reading, but that's like a huge one. So here's the thing.
Is that a whole episode, though? Do we have?
It's probably a whole episode. I could pitch you my latest envisions.
Give me the pitch, and then we'll open the black box next week.
Okay, here's my pitch. And so, disclaimer, this is something that I first really like grasped onto the idea after seeing some of Sam's code. So I hope I'm not scooping anything, because this isn't her approach necessarily, but it's kind of similar in nature. You know, it expands on it, like how we were talking that one day. So I don't know. I'm just going to pitch it. Okay?
Yes.
Here we go. So, and actually at the meetup yesterday, somebody had a question where this was pretty much the answer. I'm like, well, I kind of had this harebrained idea that I wish existed but doesn't exist, and let me tell you about it. So here's what it is. Right now, I have backend tests, right? That, let's say that they're backend tests that I use a model factory, I create a iFactory, a chair model, and I factory the chair model, and then I call chair index, whatever, and I assert that the JSON equals a certain thing, okay? That covers me for the backend. Then I have some front-end components that consume the chair's thing, and I write a Jest test with that front-end component, but I'm not hitting an actual endpoint in my Jest test. So I use Jest to mock out Axios's GET request to the index, and I pass.
And then you change the back end, and then you're.
So there's drift. Yeah. There's that out of sync whack thing. So when I change the back end, my front end tests pass, and I get false positives because they have their mocked back end endpoints, right? So we want to connect the two pieces. And there's a lot of really interesting ways to do this. Here's.
But the best one.
Yeah. So here's what I'm thinking.
Sam and I have talked about this. This is
and
a really
this
good
is
idea.
Different than what you and Sam did. So I mean,
oh, really?
Yeah. And I actually have another, like, I'll take it one step further to my paradigm.
You're not just publishing the JSON from the snapshot and then using that to build up the mocks for the front end.
I am.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, that's pretty much it, but there's no, like,
okay, yeah. No,
Dusk
that's
and
that's
NPM and all
do.
That stuff. But yeah, sorry. So you just have this, instead of your, like, assert JSON equals or whatever, you say, or you could still do that, but then you say assert matches snapshot. And it's a basic snapshot test in the back end that takes a snapshot, but it takes it in such a way that it's plain JSON, that it's just plain Jane JSON. Maybe the file name is what's used to designate like what it is.
Yeah, and you can do snapshots with
with the Spotsy package, I think, like maybe does it in plain JSON if you do a JSON snapshot.
I don't know.
But anyway, so we modify a package that already exists, or we create a package that does this, and then in the front end you have literally plain JSON fixtures that you can then mock out Axios with. And those fixtures, so when your back end changes, you'll get a failure. And when you update that failure, your front end tests will fail now. They won't give you false positives. They'll actually fail because they're relying on fixtures that your back. It's the link. It's the gap. It's the it's the contract test between your front end and your back end tests.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. And it's hard to know what to say and what not to say these days, because you're working on some snapshot stuff.
Everybody's cooking
some snapshot stuff.
Yeah, there's always...
I'm doing snapshot stuff.
Things are
cooking. Like, I'm not publishing any snapshot stuff, but I'm like working actively on snapshot stuff at work.
Yeah, like, no scooping anyone.
It's hard to know what
it's hard.
Scoop,
I know,
because
you want to talk about fun things and share all this information and all this, but I also don't want to like step on anybody's talk or package or blog post or anything like that.
Here is what I know. Samantha and Caleb are cooking on some snapshot stuff. Watch this space. Both of them will be speaking at Laracon. It's a great place to see both of them if you haven't seen them yet. We're cooking over here. We are cooking Titaners with are fire cooking these and days. With hot grease. It is good at Titan. Everyone, can I just real quick?
Yeah.
I know. Okay, listen. Titan owns this podcast. This is a Titan.
This is a Titan podcast.
Titan funded endeavor. We're doing this on our work time. We're getting paid to do this.
True.
But real quick, let me just go off the deep end and talk about how cool Titan is for a second.
Dive in.
Everybody is killing it right now.
It's true.
It is so sick over here. Everyone's got some stuff. Everyone is doing something.
Yeah.
It is sick, nasty over here at Titan. And like, it's not even the same type of stuff. Like, so we've all been getting real into mechanical keyboards recently. I know. Jose just went hog wild, went out, bought like some 1.5 million-year-old Apple extended keyboard off brand thing that he found at a Goodwill for $1.50. Soldered a USB controller into it and is now like 3D printing keycaps. The coolest project I've ever seen in my life. Oh my gosh,
the 3D printed keycap thing is the next level. What he's doing is insane.
Mind blowing.
Yep.
So he's off on that trip, which is amazing, and I cannot even express how much I love watching that.
I know.
Sam is doing some stuff over here with JavaScript. That is just next level cool.
Definitely.
I'm working on natural. You're like cooking ideas. I'm so glad you got stuck on a greenfield project because it's been a while since you were cooking ideas at the rate that you're cooking ideas right now.
I got a whole pile.
You're cooking.
Just got stir fry.
Matt's doing some stuff.
Sean just dropped a school. He schooled us all in like audio mixing and turns out he's like actually a pro at Pro Tools.
He knows the deal. He earned the name Pro Tools.
Yeah.
Sam and I and Keith and you are about to do this giant dev battle.
Yep.
Where it's React Native versus Vue with native tools, and it's going to be streamed over Twitch.
Native script.
Using two Zoom calls, managed by Jake Bathman. And we just did the tech demo of that, and like the tech is so sick. And Jake is like switching between Zoom calls and like. It's so cool. There's just so much stuff.
John
going
Bond's
on.
Dropping factory.
John Bond's dropping factory blog posts.
Yeah, there's stuff cooking.
Logan just published the PHP Storm version of TLint.
Oh, nice. Yeah, yeah, and he's got a blog post cooking. He's got TLint, which is like just this thing that's been cooking,
dude. It's cooking over here.
This is how I view Titan in my head secretly, and I sort of romanticize it.
Like, go on.
I've been into philosophy a bit, and the whole like Greek, you know, the Greek thing. It's totally romantic to me. The whole classical Greek period, basically, and classical philosophy and everything, and the Acropolis. So Titan is the I picture Titan as like the Acropolis, like where. Like the Parthenon, or not the Parthenon, but the one, like the marketplace. You know the marketplace, like below the Acropolis?
The town square.
The town square, where all the philosophers sit on the steps and they just like, and people just like kind of gather around them. But, you know, it's sort of
the barbershop, as it were.
Yeah, I don't know. It's this place where like you come and you're just like sharpened in crazy ways. Like on any given day, this is what I tell to people, like friends of mine and people who are like, where do you work? What do you do? Like, well, I guess closer people, like family, who every once in a while I'm like, nobody knows, but like in any given day, I just like somebody blew my mind on like some system, like power hierarchy thing that I've like been like taken part in my whole life or haven't been aware of at all. Some like behavioral, emotional labor, you know, like thing, you know, or and then you're schooled on mechanical keyboards and politics and money and companies and process and workflow and tech,
functional
and
programming
and functional
audio
programming
routing, yeah.
And audio routing and on any given day and all the discuss channels are just firing off all the time and you're just constantly
so sick.
Yeah, I mean, on any given day, I know so much more about the world than when I started just because there's so many people spitting out so many different things from so many different angles and the discussion, there's lots of arguing, there's lots of sharpening, you know, it's that like stones being tumbled, I suppose. And I don't know,
at previous jobs I have always been in charge of people.
Mm-hmm.
And I've either been like the smartest person in the room or like the smartest person in the room's direct boss. You know, and like, and there weren't a lot of people, and it's just so hard to really learn without just going out there and like seeking it out yourself. And it's such work to go find it, you know?
Uh-huh.
And yep. You come here and you sit down and you just try and do your job, and people keep like bombarding you with ways that make you better.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? It's mm-hmm. like you don't even have a choice. Like, you're either going to like not engage in the community here at all, or you're going to come out better. Because
mm-hmm.
this is just impossible not to. Everyone is firing. It's sick.
Yeah. I mean, like every single person, there's a moment where they whip something, or somebody just whips something out that you're like, oh, okay, so I totally didn't know how much of an expert you are at X, or like, yeah, I don't know. But yeah, totally mm-hmm. that. Like, just constant.
Cooking.
And the quiet cooking. People aren't the dumber people.
No, they just cook quietly.
They cook quietly, yeah.
Yeah, and then they're like, hey, look at this massive linter I built.